It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back to Money for Lunch. Good to have you guys here. Hey, today's show is going to be profitable. Yes. You get the show for free, but if you are, like some of our best listeners, you're going to apply some of the stuff we're going to be talking about to up-level your game and your life. Neil Carlson is going to be joining us shortly talking about sales, how to make your salespeople better. Then we're going to have with financial educator Robert Hawkins, talking about the five things you must do with your money in 2016, how to make more money with your money. And then real estate investor going to be joining us, Erica West. Taking some of your money, making more money with it is, by far the thing that we all want to do. I think it's the best use of your money. All right, so great show. Glad you're here. Buckle up. It's going to be a fun ride. My first guest, Neil Carlson, has over 40 years in sales, 30 years researching salespeople and why and how they give customers reasons not to buy, set appointments, etc. Shopped over 5,000 salespeople around the country, recorded thousands of salespeople. Neil teaches salespeople how to change their thinking and their conditioning. He's also a national, international keynote speaker, workshops, seminars, training classes, and authored numerous articles for sales magazines such as Salesman's Magazine, Sales Manager Magazine, Teleprofessional Magazine, Real Estate Magazine, The Creative Service, and ICCA Magazine for the cemetery and funeral industry. He is currently writing a book on sales language and conditioning titled You Wear Two Hats. You're just selling with the wrong one on. Neil Carlson, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thanks very much. I'm actually excited to be here, and I hope I can help you listeners out tremendously.
Well, I hope so, too. So let's talk about this. Here you are. You have talked to literally thousands of salespeople. You've listened to recordings. You trained. You shopped around. So I'm going to ask you this. What do you think is the number one problems salespeople make, and why?
Well, I'm going to tell you, that's a great question. The number one problem in all my shopping and listening to salespeople, the salespeople constantly ask for permission to do their job. Constantly. And I'll give you a great example of this, and then everybody will say, oh, yeah, you're right. When you go into a store and you go shopping, and let's say you're going to go in and buy a tie or a shirt, pair of shoes, or maybe even perfume or cologne. And you walk into that store, you go up to that counter, and you pick up that tie, that shirt, whatever it is. You kind of look at it, touch it, feel it, put it back down. Your peripheral vision picks up a shadow, and that shadow walks towards you. And you know what it is. Your subconscious mind says, uh-oh, we got a problem. And then when that shadow gets close to you, you know exactly who it is. You know it's a salesperson. You do that. Then your mind changes its thinking. What happens is, and everybody knows this, that salesperson's going to say to you, hey, hi, how you doing? May I help you with something? And without a blink of an eye, without even thinking about it, 9 out of 10 people say, no thanks, I'm just looking.
Right.
Now that salesperson's going to say that day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out, and they don't get it. They didn't hear it. They didn't hear that what they're actually doing is they're causing the customer to say no. The reason they are is because, let's face it, a lot of us just don't like salespeople. It's a stereotype is what it is, because we think all they want is our money. The salesperson keeps saying that, may I, and you keep saying no. If
right.
The salesperson said to you, instead of may I, and they had to get rid of the no, because people want to say no. And the best way to get rid of that no is is to walk up to that person or that customer or talk to them, whatever it is, and say, would you mind terribly if I asked you a question? And how do you think they're going to respond? They're going to say, no, I don't mind. Or, yes, go ahead. Same difference.
Right.
The brain says, we just got rid of the no. And because the brain just got rid of the no, all of the defensives just drop down. Once the defenses drop down, then there's no fear or threat of being sold in that customer's mind. Therefore, they've just allowed you to do whatever it is you want to do. Now you can have a conversation with them. Whereas before, if you said, may I, they're going to cut you off.
Let's back up. So same scenario. The salesperson walks up to the same customer and says, may I ask a question? And the customer says, well, sure, go ahead, or what's the question, or some kind of affirmative answer. What's the question? What's the next step?
The question would be, I was just watching you. I saw you pick up that tie, that bottle of perfume, the cologne, the shoes, the shirt. I was just wondering, what was it about that product that caused you to pick it up instead of all these products you have on the counter? Now they're going to tell you why they did it. They're also going to tell you if it was something they really liked, they're going to tell you that too. And that's the kind of
information.
That's the kind of information you want to get from people. Let's face it, nobody on the planet wants to be sold by salespeople. Everybody wants to buy on their own. So why not think about and figure, you know what? What can I say or do to make them think they're buying on their own? Well, first, you got to get rid of the defenses. You definitely have to do that. If you don't do that, they're going to stay on the defensive. And the worst part of being on the defensive is you're going to keep doing the same thing through that process. You're going to expect different results, and more often than not, you're not going to get them. And then you're going to try and think, geez, what was it I did that caused this person not to buy? And then you're not going to be able to think of it because it's past tense. Your brain is not going to access all that information because you're not thinking about the information. You're thinking about making money. So you have to change your thinking in order to change their thinking.
I love that. And you know what? And here's the other thing that I love about this strategy. We've all probably are familiar with this, is that it's a question. And when our brain is asked a question, it kind of stops us in our tracks a little bit. We have to answer this question. We have to engage the question.
Exactly. You have to do that. You have to put the brain at ease. You have to make the brain believe that there's no threat or fear of being sold. Once you do that, then the brain opens up to suggestions, to questions, to whatever it is you want to do. Unless you go back into that old mode, you keep asking permission, like would you, should you, could you, how about, can I, what if, can we? And when you start going into those, you're actually giving the customer the right to say no, because they're associating all of that language with may I. Because here's the thing, those salespeople wear two hats. They wear a hat as a consumer, a hat as a salesperson. When they're not selling, they're a consumer, and now they're doing the same thing to the salespeople that are trying to sell them. It's a condition. It's just a very, 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 very strong, in-depth condition that salespeople have because they do wear two hats, and sometimes they just get them confused, and that in itself just causes problems.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we're hearing your – is it a parrot that you have in the background there?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is in my office. Let me move out. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's all right. We're animal lovers here on Money for Lunch. Every now and then, my dog will interrupt us. And the other day we were filming here, and my cat walked in, and it's an older cat. And during our taping, we were filming a couple of videos, and my cat just walked into right where we were filming and just urinated everywhere. And so yes, we are accustomed to being upstaged by our animals on a regular basis.
I apologize for that. Go ahead.
All right. But you know what? Hopefully everybody here listening has picked up a new strategy here. I mean, think about it. When somebody walks into your store, your restaurant, the simple question can make the difference between a sale and a walkout.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, this real simple strategy, you know, is the difference, you know, can make literally tens of thousands of dollars to your sales if you just apply it. And it's not a really hard thing to do.
That's right. It's not. All you have to do is just change your thinking about what you're going to say and the kind of response you want to get in return. And when you do that, if you're not getting the response that you're looking for, you shouldn't be asking that question. You should be looking for a question that's going to help you direct that person towards the sale and towards the close.
I like that. All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to come back talking to sales expert trainer Neil Carlson. And if you want to find out more about Neil, you can go to itsallinthewords.com, because really it is all in the words. Now, bear with me 1 second, Neil. We're going to take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back.
Surely.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. We're sharing powerful strategies to help you with your skills, to up-level your game a little bit. We've been talking about this real simple question to get your salespeople to be able to engage with their customers. And because we're short on time, I'm not going to review that. You'll just have to download the show and listen to it again. But check this out. I want to move on and talk to you about this, Carl, because you talk about this thing called sales language and conditioning. What is sales language and conditioning that you refer to?
Well, sales language is actually the verbiage we use that causes customers to think more negatively than positively. You know, salespeople out there, they can talk to customers, they get them very excited, and the more excited they get, the more excited the salesperson gets, and then the two of them are bouncing up and down, back and forth with information, and the salesperson says, you know what, in my own mind, I've got this sale, all I got to do is have them sign this, and we're off and running. And then the salesperson says to the customer, you know what, all you got to do is put your name right here, and we can get started tomorrow. And then out of the clear blue, for no reason at all, doesn't make sense, the customer says, gee, you know what, give me a couple days. Let me think about it. Let me sleep on it. Let me talk to my partner. And then you're trying to figure out, geez, what went wrong? I had them so excited.
Right.
They wanted to do it, and now they don't. How does that excitement level go from so high to so low just because you said something? It's because of the language that you use that customers get turned off, or they hear something, or they hear something that's a little suspicious, or they hear something that really doesn't move them forward but actually stops them. And usually when salespeople get into that mode, which is practically all the time, they really don't know how to change it. It's the conditioning that keeps them there, because salespeople, they do basically the same thing every day, day in, day out. You know, they know their presentations. They do it by heart. They want to do it right. They want to do it well. The problem is they tweak one thing, and they really don't pick up what the customer is saying. Then in the end, it's the end, and you don't have a sale, and that's why you can't figure out what went wrong. So you really need to listen very carefully to the responses that you're getting and to validate that it's going in the right direction. Because if it's not, you're dead. So you have to say things like, this is what I hear. You sound like. You sound as though. I want to be clear. So you have to do that because, let's face it, you're talking and processing information as you speak. And you're doing this about six times faster than you can read it. So that's why it's very, very, very important to make sure when you're asking questions, you get the answer you want to get. If not, you've got to change the question, and you have to break the conditioning. Be different than everybody. Don't be the same as everybody. And the easiest way to do that is for you to go out and listen to salespeople. Because when you're a customer, it's all automatic. May I help you? And you're the customer, no thanks, I'm just looking. You see? And you don't hear that anymore. It's just an action and a reaction. That's all it
right.
is. Be different.
Yeah, you know what? One of the big takeaways I'm having from our conversation today is ask a different question so you get the response you want to move the relationship or the sales forward, right? If you're getting
Correct.
The wrong response, you just got to change the question.
Correct.
Yeah, and
you
I think – go ahead.
No, I say you have to do that because conditioning in salespeople is incredibly strong, especially if you've been doing it for a year or longer than that, because now you trained your brain to do exactly what it's going to do day in, day out. And you've got to change that. You've got to look at it, refocus on it. What I tell people to do on their own is get a tape recorder and tape your presentation. Listen to it carefully. Are you asking for people for permission to do your job? Are you giving them an out? Are you asking them to go in a different direction? Are you getting a positive response or getting no response? You know, and look for all of those things so you can train yourself to become better.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Neil, we're out of time, but I'd love to bring you back and talk more about the sales language and sales conditioning and some of these other strategies have been fantastic. I want to thank you so much for stopping by and sharing today.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I'd love to do it anytime you want to do it. I just enjoy helping people immensely.
Thank you so much. Good stuff there by Neil Carlson, and it's all in the words. You can go to his website by the same name. It's allinthewords.com. It's allinthewords.com. And you can get some idea just in this few minutes that Neil knows what he's talking about. And some of these little words or these little questions that we ask are making us or breaking us. So go check him out. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to be joined by Robert Hawkins right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. As I said, today is really a great Money for Lunch show because we are talking about not only making money, but about getting your money to make money. My next guest, Robert Hawkins, is a globally recognized adult financial educator, fiduciary and CEO of Hawkins Wealth Advisory, a fee-based financial firm in Scottsdale, Arizona. For decades, the team has worked with businesses and families, helping them build wealth, expand fortunes, and protect their assets from Wall Street and Washington. Robert Hawkins, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Bert. I'm glad I could find the time to join you this afternoon.
Absolutely. We're glad to have you here. And, you know, it's really funny. This whole thing about money really creates a love-hate relationship for most of us, right? We want to have money, but at the same time, rich people are bad and all these other weird associations that we have with money. And money is, as I always like to say, money is the most important thing when it comes to money.
No, I agree with you 100%. And it's often when you don't have it, you're not sure if you really need it. But as they say, money cannot buy happiness. Well, I'm not sure where people shop themselves, but money definitely makes things a lot easier.
Right.
And as you had touched based on, you know, those that have it and those who do not have it or tend to not have it, We deal with people, Bert, on all various levels, if they're just starting out or if they've already arrived. Often the only difference is that one person simply has a few more zeros on their financial statements than the other. But I think a lot of the general concerns and dynamics that come with effectively investing or accumulating wealth and things that go along with that is something that we really share in common.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know what, I tell you, money, people always struggle to define, you know, how important money is. And money doesn't buy happiness, but poverty doesn't either. Struggle doesn't either. And I think the funniest and best illustration of that whole money doesn't buy happiness meme is the money doesn't buy happiness, but it's a, you know, it certainly is a good deposit. And I think that's exactly what it is. You know, I mean, money, health, family relationships, all of these things are important to happiness. And if you have great family relationships, but you're broke and you can't help your family, you know, with college or weddings, that's not happiness. That's not true happiness. And if you have a lot of money, but everybody hates you and your health is destroyed, well, that's not happiness either. So I think it's having those things, you know, the relationships, the spiritual, the health and the money combined really make for a much happier life.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, money provides options. You know, I think
yes.
When we really are sitting down with people, you know, it, as you mentioned, it has a direct effect on your health, your family dynamics. And when you no longer have that financial concern always weighing down on you, that does provide great peace of mind. And you find that a lot of the other aspects of your life, from family, work, your spirituality, and just everything kind of becomes a lot more harmonious when
yes.
money is no longer an issue or concern. So it definitely opens up a lot of doors and really allows you to pursue life from a whole different perspective and point of view.
Absolutely. No, I think you hit the nail right on the head. Let's talk about this. You know, I want to get your thoughts on the oil prices. You know, people are speculating that oil is now turning around and heading north. Some people are saying, no, it's only having a short resurgence because of the summer months that are coming in. What is your take? Do you think that gas is going to go up, go down? What's your guess?
Oh, no, great question. That's something, Bert, that my phone has been ringing constantly these days from people really wanting to know my thoughts on what to expect from the economy this year and how they can best multiply their assets or take advantage of opportunities that we see coming in the very near future here. And first thing I must say, as I tell everyone with whom I speak, is I'm definitely not an economist, a politician, nor a fortune teller. Nor do I care to be any of the above. You know, many often tend to, they like to talk about the problems. We prefer to focus on being part of the solution. And the other side likes to just simply give a lot of information about what people should be doing. And often that information is very inaccurate and very misleading. And we want to take the role as financial educators. So we believe by helping people increase their overall financial literacy, that really empowers them to make purposeful decisions. But on the subject of oil and just where do I see the oil market going and gas prices, although I can't foresee the bottom of any market, no one can really determine that. But personally, I believe we will see oil somewhere around the $24 to $25 a barrel range. I think that that's something that we should expect as early as the end of the second quarter of this year or early Q3 of 2016. And I think that's going to definitely translate into benefits for the average consumer because that's going to also bring gas prices down potentially another 20 to 30 cents per gallon by middle to end of this summer. But that's also where the trouble really does start to brew. In relation to the economy, which I will touch base on here shortly as well. But I do believe we're definitely going to see, we're not seeing the bottom of the oil market yet, but it is close ahead.
Gotcha. All right, so let's talk about this. Since we're already talking about the oil prices, why don't you expand on you know, that these lower prices is the beginning of the trouble, as you said. The what do you call it? The beginning of the brew? What is
Oh, the beginning of where the real trouble begins to brew, because everything I'm kind of looking at from the big picture, Bert,
sure.
when it comes to the bubble that's been created, you know, obviously with our markets these days and just the economy, everything is no longer cyclical, but everything is a boom followed by, unfortunately, a bust. And when I'm looking at things from the bubble, I think the bubble is really where people should focus their attention and understand really what's going on. So let's look at interest rates. You know, what will happen or potentially happen with interest rates here in 2016? I think the Federal Reserve hinted the best that they would most likely raise rates again here in 2016, but I believe rates will remain steady due to not only market demand, but more than central bank intervention. And with the U.S. dollar being as strong as it is in America, we're simply not exporting goods at the rate that we should. And this one reason that the GDP, or the gross domestic product, has been so low, that's also going to affect foreign currencies. They have a much lower purchasing power against the U.S. dollar. Therefore, they're making fewer purchases than what we would hope for. Now, on the flip side of that, Berg, if interest rates do happen to increase too much, then we also run the risk of Americans not being able to buy products either, thereby sending our GDP into troublesome territory, because when goods aren't bought, products don't get produced, and when products aren't being produced, workers get laid off. And I think we're starting to see the beginning of that transition now. Here in Arizona, one of our big tech companies, Intel, you know, something that everyone knows about Intel, a Fortune 500 company, they've already made notice that they're going to start laying off hundreds of employees in the coming couple of months. And I think that the peripheral businesses that also rely on companies, big companies like Intel, it's going to have a huge trickle-down effect.
I agree. I think that Intel, what was it, something like they expect to lay off, was it like 10,000 people or 12,000? It was a huge number.
On a global scale, about 12,000. I think here in the state of Arizona alone, in the greater Phoenix area, it's going to start with 500 in one particular location. And the estimated effect of that is going to be a few thousand, 2,000 to 3,000 job losses recurring thereafter.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the, as you said, it's this trickle effect. And so they lay off, you know, if you just look at the macro, they lay off 500 here, and all of a sudden that 500 starts to affect literally thousands of other people, and you can see how it continues to spiral. Now you do the 12,000 people globally, and that has multiple trickle effects here and there. And the other thing that you mentioned that a lot of people sometimes don't realize is if Intel is laying off people, that means they're cutting back on their spending. So, you know, so all their vendors are going to feel the effect of these cutbacks, which means the vendors that are used to having X amount of employees are going to be laying off employees.
Absolutely.
All right. So let me ask you, go ahead.
Oh, no. And I was going to say, you know, and really looking over the next 8 to 12 months, just, you know, the overall impact and, you know, relating back to the gas prices, I think that something that we all do that we don't tend to realize is that when gas prices are low, we tend to spend more. And also people tend to create debt during the times to where something as simple as lower gas prices, people are starting to incur more debt and get themselves in debt. And then once everything kind of goes on the adverse, people are going to find themselves in a pretty sticky situation if they're not really focused on consolidating certain debts at this point in time, and really focused on going a little heavier cash, really focus on savings right now.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to ask you, I wanted to talk about interest rates, but let's talk about, I think this is the biggest problem that all Americans have, is our aversion that we have when it comes to saving, and our addiction that we have to, that comes to to debt. It seems like, you know, we save as little money as possible. Some people say it's 2% or less, and that the average American, you know, if they had a $500 emergency, would be screwed. Now you're looking at thousands of Americans who are going to be laid off and have no savings. But yet, you know, I don't know what it's going to take for us to start saving more money.
And I think that's a very good point you made there, Bert. And when it comes to savings, I always tell people you have to have a game plan. You know, it's a matter of really sitting down with your spouse or just sitting down with yourself. And regardless if it's for your family and household or if it's a business, you do have to put together an effective game plan. And the time and days that we find ourselves in, from a global economy and a lot of other things on the outside that can have a tremendous impact within our own households, is going back to the savings within our culture. You know, it's a cultural thing to where it is spend more, save less, and Americans are on average saving about 2% of their taxable income. What people really need to think about is always put yourself first. You know, prepare. It's not always about preparing for a worst case scenario, but actually put yourself first. Always try to save, even if it's 2 to 5% of every paycheck, stick that in a safe place and then focus on your expenses. And if you have something left over, then you kind of go out and you enjoy things thereafter. But you definitely want to try to focus on putting something away with every paycheck first and foremost. And what you actually find, it may take a little practice for a few months, but soon that does become a habit, and you'll find that you actually start to have more money left over in the end, and you start to build a nice little emergency fund or a safety net within your nest egg.
Yes. And I like what you said there. It becomes a habit. And it's like a lot of things, you have to build up to it. So you start maybe at 2 or 3% and then maybe 5% and then eventually, you know, 7 or 8 or 10%. But, you know, ultimately, the peace of mind that you're looking for, that we all want, is in the savings of our money and not in the spending of our money.
Correct.
All right, so let's go back to this, because we're going to be short on time here. I wanted to get your input on the interest rates. You know, interest rates for 2016, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think interest rates are related to the bubble. I think that the Fed will try to curtail interest rates for the time being just to try to move along the economy. But over the next 8 to 12 months, after oil and gas prices see their lows, those prices will have a rapid increase. People will be used to having the extra income from the low gas prices, as I recently mentioned, and the rude awakening will be the force that many are to go deeper into debt if they already aren't there to begin with. And staying on that topic, when the oil prices do can start to go in the adverse direction, we're going to continue to see companies in that industry go bankrupt, laying off large masses of employees, the laid off workers from the oil industry, as well as the peripheral companies that have the bank loans ever since 2010. With so many banks allowing companies to be so highly leveraged, those banks will quickly run through their own reserves. That will create a national liability. Automobile manufacturers currently seeing near record sales and profits. They're also going to see a dramatic reduction in demand for product, which also will result in further layoffs in that industry sector. The peripheral businesses in the automobile sector, you know, on the adverse, will be forced to lay off workers as well, thereby reducing demand for many products even more. The U.S. dollar, I believe, will remain strong until late third or early fourth quarter of 2016. At that time, I believe China will tighten their monetary policy, thereby strengthening their position in the global economy. And America will be in a downward spiral by the end of this year. With low GDP growth, rapidly increasing unemployment, and with the increasing oil prices under a newly devalued dollar, by early next year, the low interest rates and a weaker dollar will also make foreign investments in America very attractive in certain sectors, especially in real estate. And I think you would agree, we're already seeing within our firm a lot of foreign money starting to really stage itself here on American soil. And a lot of that money is focused on American real estate. So American companies, they will become targets for a lot of friendly mergers as well as hostile acquisitions, as I say. So around the time that interest rates increase to 10-year highs, I think that's going to come early Q1 of 2017. Speaking of the real estate sector, if people are not properly prepared and if they're not managing their debts properly, I think we're going to see that increasing in interest rates to 10-year highs. You're going to also have an impact on the adjustable mortgages. They will also reset. And at the rates, it's going to make a lot of monthly payments for households simply out of reach, which would cause another increase in foreclosures. I don't believe it's going to be to the magnitude of 2008, simply some different fundamentals at play there.
Right.
But there will be another flood of housing inventory, reducing the values of home prices, in certain zip codes. It's not going to be a rampant nationwide, wave that hits us, but it's things that people really need to be aware of on a national level. So foreign investors will purchase much of the glut of that because of the newfound increase in currency valuation against the U.S. dollar. And most importantly, for Americans, it's going to present a phenomenal opportunity of value. If you kind of just pull back the reins, get good information, work with people you can trust if you have a financial team or advisor. If you don't, you definitely want to work with a trusted advisor or someone that understands various asset classes, because the opportunity is going to be there. As they say, more millionaires are made in times of turmoil, Bert, than when there is an abundance. So
yes,
I think timing is key there.
And I want to point this out. I want to point this out real quick. And you didn't ask me to say this, and you and I don't know each other or anything like that. But in the intro there, I talked about the fact that you have a fiduciary designation. And I think that's important for a lot of people to investigate. If you don't know the importance of a fiduciary type of designation, that's really, to me, what people should need to be looking for. If you're talking to a financial advisor who basically can only sell you stocks and he's what I call a captive agent, he only works for one company, and he can only sell you what that company deems worthwhile. And sometimes that's not the best thing for you. You have to get independent fiduciary type of advice is looking for you. You're looking for your best interest.
Very well spoken, Bert. And that is something, unfortunately, that is, it's almost a virus of the industry. And you have a lot of good people in this industry who, unfortunately, have kind of put themselves in a bottleneck. And, you know, as in sales and anything else, people, you know, find that they have to kind of try to sell the product of whatever's going to put food on their table.
Sure.
And as a fiduciary, you know, you hit the nail right on the head. You know, as a fiduciary level of responsibility, our obligation is to what's in the best interest of the client at all times. We are afforded the flexibility because we do work in all the various asset classes. As I say, anything that's really worth looking into, we have a global reach, but we do have the flexibility of being able to go out and really helping people, first and foremost, educate them. You know, you have to have purpose in everything that you do. Don't be afraid to ask questions of why. People are a little too passive about just taking someone's advice for granted,
right,
without really understanding what is the purpose in making that recommendation. You know, we're a little different than others because anything we ever bring to the table, more often than not, we actually have skin in the game ourselves. You know, we utilize a lot of the same platforms, asset classes, and strategies that we build a portfolio around. Usually we are invested in those same exact platforms or assets that we're recommending to our clients or helping them kind of put their game plan together. We use those for our own families. You know, what are we doing to protect our own families, to protect and grow our own businesses? You know, they say if it's good for the goose, it should be good for the gander. I believe it is. So we do bring a great level of clarity and transparency to the table. But on that note, it's also important that even as fiduciaries or certified financial planners or advisors, whatever title or designations the professionals within our industry tend to hold, it always simply comes down, Bert, to the who is the person at the other end of the table across from you or on the phone. If they have an agenda or if they are not properly educated in all the various options that are out there, often you'll still get inaccurate or partial information. So you really do have to do your homework and make sure that you choose who you work with, you know, wisely. And of course, we're always here. You know, we're one of those, we never hesitate to have a candid discussion with people and really just be forthright. If there's something we can do to help, more than happy to help. If there's something we can't do, we will let you know that. And if you're already doing the right things, we'll let you know that as well.
Yeah, I like that so much. Hey, Robert, we're out of time, but I want to quickly talk about this. So we only got about a minute here. What bubbles do you see in the horizon?
And I'm sorry, Bert, mention that one more time. I didn't hear your question.
What bubbles do you see coming up in the horizon?
The bubbles over the horizon, other than the ones that we've already discussed as some of the main industry sectors, when it comes to just the equities market in general, we are on that verge just as in 2008. There's going to be a huge transition of wealth. I tell people who, especially a lot of Americans, are holding a great deal of wealth in mutual funds. Mutual funds are not always a bad thing, but you really have to know what level of risk you're carrying on your shoulders. I always said mutual funds are one of those to where American investors are carrying a lot of risk weight on their backs, really for very little value in return. So that is one area that I personally am telling people, not necessarily to bail out and get out, but there are far better options out there. So if you're heavily weighted in mutual funds, you definitely want to sit down with your advisor and look at better options.
All right. So this is what I'd like to do. Robert, we wanted to talk about the five things you must do with your money. We didn't get to that, but I'd love to bring you back and talk about the five things you must do with your money in 2016. And if you guys want to reach out to Robert and his team, you can go to HawkinsWealthAdvisory.com. Robert Hawkins, thank you so much for stopping by.
It's a pleasure. I appreciate your time.
You bet. Good stuff there from Robert Hawkins, globally recognized as a financial educator. And really, it's about not only making the money. That's, for most of us, the easiest thing. Make money. Saving it. Investing it and protecting it. Those are the three things that are the toughest for most of us. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. Erica West. Erica West is a former teacher and curriculum administrator in New York and Massachusetts. Moved to small town Fountain Hills, Arizona in 1984. She started a real estate career in 84, worked with her husband. They opened their own Remax franchise in 1989. They sold it in 2000 and subsequently opened Erica West and Company, which they sold in 2005. They currently work there at the same franchise today, consistently recognized for her production. Erica is the recipient of the RE/MAX Lifetime Achievement Award and a member of the RE/MAX Hall of Fame, appeared on CBS affiliate TV programs as a real estate expert answering consumer questions, certified and skilled negotiator, a seller specialist representative. Erica has sold over 2,000 homes just in the Fountain Hills area. And for you guys who don't know how big Fountain Hills is, that's, you know, I've only been out there a few times, but I think she's probably sold most of the homes over and over again. I'm just kidding. I don't know. Either way, Erica West, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Absolutely.
And to share.
Absolutely. Now, okay, so you were involved in a book called Transform. Let's talk about this. The book Transform, how did you get involved with the book?
Well, I've always been a proponent of self-development and listening to all the mentors that I've picked in my life, and one of them was Brian Tracy. And I guess as a result of purchasing a lot of his tapes and discs years ago, I received an invitation if I would like to be part of a book that he was going to be putting together, and that the book is called Transform. And I was delighted for the information, and that was how I came to say yes and write a chapter in the book.
I love it. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so cool. Brian Tracy is just an awesome individual. I've had the pleasure of sharing the stage with him and having dinner and lunch with him, and he's just, you know, what you hear or see on these videos and these TV shows and these, what do you call it, his material is, you know, exactly how he is in real life. He's just the same guy and really responsible for inspiring a lot of us to, you know, to become trainers and salespeople and up-level our game, if you will. Brian Tracy is just one of those sales masters that is responsible for changing thousands of businesses and countless lives.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. He was a huge influence for me, as were others like Tony Robbins and Jim Rohn, and, you know, the list goes on. But I was always, probably because I have been an educator, education
right.
is really so important to me, and I'm always
sure.
educating myself.
Well, and I think that, you know, my dad, for instance, is 94 years old, and he's constantly reading and writing, and there's a certain, I think that is the, if not the key, certainly one of the keys to having a long, vibrant life is that continuous education. When you stop learning, I think, is when you start dying.
Yes, absolutely. I really do believe in that, and that's why I just continue to go and go and learn more and more, which is what I'm even doing now. I'm changing my business.
And,
mm-hmm.
All right, so let's talk about this real quick. Tell us a little bit about your chapter and what inspired you to write about that particular subject matter.
Well, when I first got the invitation to write for a book called Transformed, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to write about. And then giving it some real thought and thought about what the word itself means, which really means to change your life, or means to change something.
Right.
I started to think about my own life and realized that I had had an enormous, enormous transformation from the time that I was a school teacher. You know, my husband a salesman and struggling to becoming a great success in my life beyond my wildest dreams. And I thought, well, how did that happen? And that was the story I decided to tell, which was just briefly that I was a teacher in Massachusetts at that time, and my husband had a dream. He dreamt that we were standing in front of the Grand Canyon with his arms wide open, and he said, oh, let's go to Phoenix and see what it's like to live there, because I hated the cold of Massachusetts. So we threw the kids and the cats into the covered wagon, and we went west.
The kids and the cats.
And the cats into the covered wagon. I mean, you know, that is summing it up very briefly. But truth be told, on the way out there, I was in an automobile accident, 36-car pileup.
Mm.
My brother was driving my car, and I was a passenger. And there were several people killed, and it was really a horrific thing to go through and to see what was happening there. It was a whiteout. And the thing is, I never got hurt. Nothing ever happened to us. Our car was totally destroyed. And we just kept on going. In other words, we could have turned back. We could have said, never mind, we're not going to do this. It's too frightening.
Right.
But we took the risk, and we kept on going. And because we kept on going, we entered an entire new life, which transformed everything for us. And that's really my story. My story is you can be as frightened. People live in fear all the time, and they are they're very frightened to come out of their comfort zones. They just stay where they are. And when you take a risk and you forget the fear or overcome the fear by just taking action, you can end up, that's your transformation. And that was my transformation. And I wanted to share it because basically I'm a teacher. Deep
I love
down
that.
Inside. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that.
So
you can take the teacher out of the schoolhouse, but you can't take this. No, you can take the teacher. There's something in there about taking the teacher out of the schoolhouse, but you can't
take the teaching out of the teacher.
Something like that. Yes. Yes.
Something
like
that. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, let me ask you this. Here you are. You're in Arizona real estate. And what is your thoughts as far as real estate here in our great state of Arizona? Do you think that we're seeing a top market now and it's going to start slowly turning around? Or do you still think we have gain ahead?
You know, the gain, I think, is going to be very slow. Coming from the terrible markets that we came from, people got just so overexcited at the fact that the market was going up and the short sales were gone and the foreclosures were mostly gone, that they thought, okay, now's the time. And they put their homes on the market, and their expectations were greater than the reality. And I think that has influenced the market a lot. It's been the sales have picked up. They're much, much better than they were. Phoenix is probably one of the fastest growing states again because the job market has gotten much better. But in this area, there's been a lot of over expectation, and prices are not as high as they thought they would be. So that has affected the market. Right now, this is the beginning of what we call our slow season, because this is where everybody goes home unless they live here full-time. And even if they live here full-time, if they can get out for a couple of months, they will do that to a second home or so on. So right now, we are beginning to see it slow down a little bit, basically function of the market. But I do believe that it is going to continue to go up over the next few years because we're still in that growth cycle. You know, the cycles go 7 to 10 years in real estate, and we're still in the cycle where we can go up, and then we don't know, of course, what will happen when it turns again, but trust me, it will, because it always does. It's
always
like a Ferris wheel.
Yeah. You know, and I'm glad you said that. It always does. Look, this is the thing. And I'm a little slow. I admit that I am a little slow at learning sometimes, but it took me a while to realize that whether it's the real estate market or the stock market or whatever market you want to pick, they all have a up and a down, an up and a down. And I think that if you were to buy real estate right now and tomorrow the real estate would crash, just give it a little bit of time. It'll come back up. It's nothing to panic about if you're in it for the long haul. Now, if you're trying to make short-term money, yeah, that could be a bad deal.
You know, it's not a good idea.
No,
it really isn't. Yeah, it's very much, I like to, the allegory I like to use is that it's life is like a Ferris wheel. Because you get on at the bottom and it starts to go up, 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 up. And then when you reach the pinnacle, it comes down, 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 down. And then it goes back up, 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 up. And it all depends on where you are in that cycle. And you have to understand that, and you have to invest within the understanding that, in fact, what goes up is going to come down, but hang in there, it's going back up again. It's life.
Right. That is life. I think that's it. I think we've answered all the questions here on Money for Lunch. We've got it all figured out. But no, that is life. I mean, isn't it? This will date me a little bit, but there's a song, I think, was it Doris Day, that used to sing, "What goes up must come down"?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
I'm not sure,
like
but I know the saying.
Yeah, and like you said, look, that is life. That we are on a Ferris wheel, so today you're on the very top, and then in a very short time you'll be at the very bottom. And I think I had a chance to interview the actor Hugh Jackman, and mm-hmm. he was very sensible about his fame. He knows that it's short lived, and it's one of those things that. He expects that, you know, he considers himself an optimist, but he likes to think, be realistic that all this is going to disappear just like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, and people will forget about him and he's okay with that. And it's just one of those things where, again, he's at the top of the Ferris wheel, but he knows that sooner or later he'll be at the bottom of the Ferris wheel.
And I think what happens
to a lot of people is they think they're at the top and they're always going to stay at the top, or they think they're at the bottom and it's always going to be at the bottom, you know, and either way you have to be prepared for it, because look, if all of a sudden the real estate market crashed tomorrow and you're sitting on a bunch of money, now you can buy some really good deals, and that's mm-hmm. what being prepared is all about. Anyway, we'll talk about that another time. Let me go back to the book a little bit and talk about this. What do you want readers to take away from your story?
Oh, that's such a good question. The readers, I'm thinking, what I really want them to take away from it is to not be afraid to risk. Regardless of what your situation is in life, you have choices. If you accept your situation, whatever it is, then you have made a choice. You've made the choice to accept it. If you did not accept it, then you have made a choice to grow and to go on. But there's a risk involved, and that's usually what paralyzes people, is that fear of the risk. And I wanted them to take that away because I know how my life has changed. And as a result, I have been able to change other people's lives. And it would have never happened if I had not risked everything I had and just gone with blind faith. And the blind faith was, at the time, we were a lot young. We were younger. We were in our 40s. We had whatever money we had that from the sale of our home, which wasn't a lot of money, and we said, you know what? We are young, we are healthy, we are smart, we can't fail. And it was that was the blind faith.
Yes.
And we just moved forward. And as I said, the transformation in my life allowed me to transform the lives of many, many thousands of people, because people always move in order to improve their lives. Whatever that is, they are moving to improve their lives.
I want to stop there a second and emphasize this. I hope you guys mm-hmm. picked up on it. People are always moving to improve their lives. Think about that. And sometimes we physically move to improve our lives, but sometimes it's just a mental shift. It's just that little mental movement, right? So we have to mentally move in order to improve our lives. Staying stagnant, staying the same does not really help us.
No. In fact, who is it? I think it was Einstein that said, if you continue to do the same thing and expect different results, expect different results, you're crazy because you're not going to get them. I may have said that backwards, but I'm sure you get the gist.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. You know what? It's I'm glad you said that because I think it's very apropos that, yeah, if you continue to do the same thing and expect different results, then you are nuts. I think it's more or less the gist of that. Erica West, we're actually out of time. I want to say thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. You can find out, you can get Erica's book called Transform on Amazon or wherever good books are sold. And Erica West, love to have you back again.
I would enjoy that very much. And thank you so much for letting me share with everybody. I appreciate it.
You bet. You bet. Good stuff there from Erica West, real estate agent, best-selling author. Lot of great little nuggets of wisdom there. including but not limited to, you got to move to improve. That'll be the phrase that we end with today. If you want progress, you got to move it, either mentally or physically or both. Remember, you were created.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.